CinemaVino is brought to you by Audible. Audible has an expansive list of books and podcasts spread across a ton of genres. Sign up and you get to keep one title per month for yourself. As a movie nerd, I'm looking forward to Quentin Tarantino's Cinema Speculation. In it, he analyzes classic movies with a special emphasis on 70s American cinema. He puts a personal touch on his analysis, giving you special insight into the movies that led him to be a filmmaker. Also, All About Me by Mel Brooks. In this book, the 95-year-old comedy icon discusses his transformative career across stage, TV screen, and cinemas. He's a man with a million stories, so this is a must for movie fans. Sign up today for your free 30-day trial of Audible. Visit www.audibletrial.com/cinemavino. Once again, that's www.audibletrial.com/cinemavino. And welcome back.
You're court low.
To CinemaVino.
Or am I court too high?
Not for my nose.
Oh, okay. We got Sean Jordan and Brabs Tud, Travis Budd.
How's it going?
TJB.
I saw Taylor today. He does exist. He's got a new puppy.
They do exist.
Yeah. And hopefully his facial reconstruction is going really well and he's looking good. Looking sharp.
His chin damn near healed.
Yeah.
The mafia is not even going to recognize him.
Nope. No. He'll be totally a new person. I'm looking forward to that.
Mm-hmm.
My name's Todd Wofford. And this is going to be the first part of our next series where we look at movies that we, at least one of us, has not seen before. These are all-time classic AFI Top 100 movies. So I forgot to look where this particular movie ranks. Unforgiven is the movie we're going to kick off with.
I have never seen it before. I've
also never seen it.
I've seen the last 6 minutes, I think, once on TV, and that's it.
Hmm. Interesting. Probably a heavily censored version that was given the violence of the movie.
Mm.
But yeah, we're going to do a little Bone Shaker Zinfandel with this. This is a Lodi Zinfandel. You could look at this two ways. This movie was primarily filmed a lot of it in California, kind of Clint Eastwood stomping grounds. This is a wine from Lodi.
I thought it was Lottie. It's in Lottie Dottie. He likes Lottie.
Very similar.
That D looks a lot like an O. Are you sure it's not Louie?
Louie Louie.
So this is the Bone Shaker wine from Louie.
Louie.
But it's a good, rich, very nice, fruity red Zin. Got some nice balance. Got some nice body to it. And as we discussed.
Yeah, it's got some flavors of plum, boysenberry, dark chocolate, and hints of vanilla and oak.
That Trav is reading directly.
Best paired with lasagna, barbecue ribs, or your favorite pizza.
Off the back label. I was about to say, Zin is your classic pizza wine. If you're ever looking for something to have a nice, a good, decent pizza with.
Does it have to be a good pizza, though?
Well, I mean, it's like some comedian said one time, it's even bad pizza, still pizza, you know?
I don't know. I've had Papa John's.
It's true. There's some bad.
I'd go with a margarita pizza, but then I would add a protein of some sort.
Yeah.
Like a chicken? Or you more of a red meat margarita?
I mean, you know what? I'll take a chicken.
Yeah.
But with bacon bits.
Yeah.
So you're kind of going for like the paradise pie from Hideaway.
Ooh.
It's like an Alfredo sauce with chicken and I think bacon,
yeah,
spinach, mushrooms,
okay,
tomato.
Yeah. Hope you're all getting hungry out there.
I guess mostly since it does say lasagna or pizza, I would imagine they're saying it goes mostly with like
red
tomato
sauce.
Yeah. But yeah, I would do it with Alfredo sauce too. I don't give a shit.
Yeah.
I don't give a shit. Well, margarita pizza doesn't have tomato sauce.
Well, I'm not that smart. No. It does have tomatoes though.
sliced
Roma tomatoes,
whatever.
Honestly, if there's hot cheese and bread involved, fuck it, I'm game.
That's what I told my prom date.
Mm.
It's on the back of my letter jacket.
Okay, so Unforgiven, a little background on this. We'll go back to the wine here in a little bit, but this was released August 13th, 1992. Grossed $159 million against a $14 million budget. This was a pretty big hit.
Kind of Western's coming back. Comeback.
This
mid-90s. $159?
Yeah, against a $14 million budget, so pretty good.
Jeez. Was most of that $14 million just going to the cast?
Oh, I'm sure, yeah.
It's a pretty heavy cast.
Yeah.
What he wrote and directed it, right?
Clint,
or just directed?
He produced, directed, and starred in.
Mm.
So this so was
he
probably
actually, so he didn't write it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He probably didn't, have to pay himself much because I know that's
He probably got paid on the back end.
Yeah.
Got
some, oh, yeah.
Got some points.
Mm-hmm. Percentages.
This was actually written by a guy named David Webb Peoples, who actually co-wrote Blade Runner. He wrote this script before Blade Runner, and it sat around for a long time and kind of languished. And it was originally intended for John Malkovich to play the lead character, believe it or not.
Mm. I would love that.
That would be a very different movie with John Malkovich.
If it could be being John Malkovich, forgiven. Unforgiven?
Yeah.
Unfor Malkovich?
Yeah.
And so Clint Eastwood bought this in the 80s and sat on it until he was basically old enough to play the lead part.
Oh, all right.
So this script actually dates back to like the 70s. This won 4 Academy Awards, Best Picture, Best Director, Best Supporting Actor for Gene Hackman, and Best Editing for Joel Cox. This movie, along with Lonesome Dove and Dances with Wolves, led a revival of the Western in the late 80s and early 90s.
Tombstone and Wyatt Earp not far behind, right?
They spawned a whole 94. Bunch of Westerns, yeah.
What year was Tombstone, 94?
I think it was...
93.
Yeah.
Okay.
I knew
that's
it wasn't,
a damn good Western.
I knew it wasn't the same year as Pulp Fiction, and I know Pulp Fiction's 94. That's always my bar.
But yeah, this definitely helped spawn all those movies later. It basically proved the Western was still a viable way because it was dead for years before that.
Short resurgence, though.
Yeah, didn't last long. They're not big anymore.
Mm-hmm. Well, kind of like how gangster movies saw a resurgence also around the same time.
Goodfellas.
Yeah.
Like, what was the Scarface? Most recent big Western?
83.
Okay.
What would have been the most recent Western? The last one I can think of is like 310 to Yuma and then the, I'm going to say the Jeff Lebowski, Rooster Cogburn. What movie is that?
True Grit.
True Grit remake.
Oh, yeah.
But I really, and I know Kurt Russell did like Tomahawk Johnson or whatever the fuck that was.
I know there's something recent.
Django.
Django. Fuck yes. Yeah.
The only thing I can think of for some reason was Cowboy vs. Aliens.
That I thought about.
Daniel Craig.
Which honestly, I was kind of upset when I saw that because I heard the title and I was like, fucking xenomorphs and cowboys, god damn it, yes.
With Harrison Ford and Lee.
Take my money.
Shit out of it. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Fuck.
Kind of like Predator did their
yes.
Predator.
That's what I thought it was at first. I was like, that is fucking great.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Actually Eastwood going into this said this would be the last starring Western he would ever do. So end of an era for that.
And was it in fact the last Western he did?
Yes. He actually did one a year or two ago. I can't think of the name of it now, but I watched and reviewed it, but kind of a quasi, it was a modern day Western.
I was going to say, he does a lot of like Western vibes with all
Nouveau Western.
Yeah.
But the Western with classical, like the old school Western, this is the last one that he's done for that.
Like I think most of his movies these days are just like, I'm an old racist man.
Gran Torino.
Yep.
Don't fuck with me.
No, don't fuck with me. I did bad shit.
Get off my lawn. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
This is...
Is that not this movie, right?
Yeah. No, this is basically drunk Popeye is what this is. This whiskey is his spinach. That's my review.
So this is... I would classify this as an anti-Western. This is a deconstruction of the Western.
An Eastern.
Exactly. This is a Nor'eastern. All the tropes of the Western, pretty much almost every single scene of this movie is an anti-Western trope. It's a flip on something. It muddies all of the classic Western tropes. And basically, you know, no period of American history has been romanticized like that time period, the second half of the 19th century. And like the movies that have been made about it glorify the violence. They mythologize all the heroes to an extreme degree. Probably no genre, gangster films are as close, or I'd say distant second from mythologizing their heroes. Basically, Unforgiven tries to strip all of that away of like the classic Western. Watching it again, I noticed that like where just about every single scene is all about flipping stuff around and making it the opposite of what people you would think a Western would be.
Can you give an example?
Oh man, I mean, you think about like the scenes where they're like discussing going off on their mission. I mean, they're you know, Clint Eastwood says, well, we're going to do it for money. You know, it's like they're not doing it for any sort of heroic reasons, like your classic John Wayne type. They're not doing it to avenge the woman. He's like, you know, it's going to help the you know, the youngins. Or it's like they're riding along and Morgan Freeman asks, have you been into town? You know, like, have you been into town? And basically they're talking about masturbation. You know, like, Morgan Freeman's like,
You banging whores?
Using your hand. You know, it's like there's all these scenes that you would never see in like an old school Western.
You don't miss it.
Yeah. And it's like you just go on and on where it's like, you know, the you know, Gene Hackman is a sheriff, Law and Order, and he is a sadist. You know, it's like it's clear that he's not necessarily interested in law as order, as like, you know, was it like quiet, basically calm, tranquility.
Yeah. If you had to describe his alignment, would you say lawful evil, lawful neutral?
He's lawful evil to me for sure.
Yeah. Ooh, yeah. Lawful evil. But it's weird. This is mostly shades of gray, because it's not necessarily, I got this movie mixed up with, I think, The Quick and the Dead, that Gene Hackman is also in, right?
Yeah.
And he's like a big old meanie that they have, what, kind of a competition of, I don't think I've seen that movie all the way through.
Russell Crowe's in that, I believe.
Yeah. And Sharon DiCaprio's Stone.
In that, yeah.
Oh yeah.
He's in very young.
I think I maybe, and not Mel Gibson. He's in, that's Maverick.
Maverick, yeah.
See, several of these that happened in the 90s, they all blurred together to me. So watching this, I thought Gene Hackman was going to be much worse of a character. Like, obviously, he didn't do right by the women that were wronged in this. They were like, what? Fucking horses? Mm-hmm. Ponies? What the fuck is this?
And he's like, well, your property. You know, your damaged property. Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, he was still getting a form of justice, but not to the level that the women were like, fuck that.
Yeah, he pays the pimp
for
her getting slapped.
Mm-hmm.
The amount of time that the word horse is said in this movie makes me feel like Frank Reynolds wrote it.
I mean, it's like my wife and I are watching Lonesome Dove. I don't know if you guys are familiar with Lonesome Dove, but same deal. I mean, it's not as much as this, but it's also revisionist Western.
But did the second cowboy deserve to get killed? Like, all he did, like, he wasn't the involved in it.
Cowboy?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. He ran in, he, like, held her down, and then was like, wait a minute, what the fuck are you doing? And then he ran off and, like, tried to get him to stop.
His
and then
first
he even,
instinct was to hold her down.
Yeah. He was like, hold her down. He was like, oh, yeah, of course. I don't know what's happening.
Yeah.
You know, he didn't know if she was stealing or whatever. But, like, then he's like, whoa, what the fuck? You're just going to cut her? No. Like, calm down. And then he tries to give her a pony. He's like, no, I've given you all the horses I'm going to, but I brought an extra
this
pony or one.
Mm-hmm.
This is for you. You can buy it. You can do whatever. Like, he tried to pay the wronged party for something that he didn't ever do.
Yeah.
So I was like, oh, for some reason I thought she was going to kind of like fall for the second cowboy, the younger guy that wasn't shitty.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that is them playing in the gray area of morality.
Oh, yeah. Of the whole movie. Yeah. It's like,
yeah, the whole thing. Yeah. It doesn't have like Gene Hackman and damn it, what is that now? What's the other movie I just mentioned?
Quick and the Dead.
Quick and the Dead. Yeah, where he's just a fucking asshole. It's just, these are a series of incidents. This is just like a historical thing of,
it's a vignette.
This is what happened. We're not making one person out to be like the worst person in the world.
Yeah.
Gene Hackman just like wants law by any means necessary.
And that's why I was asking, he actually neutral evil? You know, he doesn't have like a evil agenda. Or
he's just the he's the police chief of Malibu. He likes his nice, quiet beach community.
Yeah, he's going to do whatever it takes to like keep his city peaceful.
He has his code, and he will enforce his code.
Yeah, and if a bad guy rolls into town with a gun, even if they haven't done anything, he's going to make sure they don't have a gun.
Mm-hmm.
He's going to round up a posse and make sure that they get anybody who's trying to enforce justice that's not his justice.
He didn't kill Richard Harris.
Mm-mm. He sent him a message.
Yeah, he gave him the opportunity. He's like, hey, man, you can pick it up. And he was fair. He gave, like, bullets were in the gun. I mean, even though he was ready to go. But the guy was being handed a cocked, loaded gun and was like, I better not. I mean, he didn't kill him. He kicked the shit out of him, and he was like, you came into my town, told one of my deputies you didn't have a gun when clearly you did. You just try to big dick it, and I mean, you came up. That's all the Westerns are, is like,
big dick.
It's big dicking it. Like, you came in big dicking it when you didn't know that there's fucking a Jaws big dick here, and the same thing. This is, to me, and I said Popeye with the spinach whiskey, basically, of him like, oh, he finally had whiskey once they killed his friend. This is, I equate everything back to comic books. This is the Incredible Hulk. This is Clint Eastwood is kind of playing Bruce Banner, where he's like, no, I don't want you to make me mad. Like, I'm not having the whiskey. Like, I could be bad. I was bad before. I'm better now. Let's just do what we got to do, whatever. But as soon, and he took his kicking and he didn't get fucking crazy. That's all Hulk is. He goes into a diner. Locals start fucking with him and like, man, you don't want to do that. You wouldn't like me when I'm angry. Takes the ass kicking and is like, God, this is the kindest thing I'm ever doing for you, is like letting you kick my ass. But then as soon as you like wrong him, like as soon as you piss him off, Clint Eastwood, he drinks the Drano. He takes the swig and you're like, everybody's fucked now. And that's exactly what happens. He comes back and he hulks out.
He does it the minute he finds out that Morgan Freeman's dead. Like, yes. He starts chugging.
He it's immediately a subtle, takes a swig.
Subtle thing. It's like, yeah, that's, yeah, you're right. It's like he's reverted. He's fully back
he's
to his old ways.
He's letting it in.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And it's like, it made me think of the Aesop's, like the Scorpion and the Fox, the fable where it's like, you know, can you fight against your nature? You know,
Scorpion and the Frog.
Yeah. I've heard different versions of it. But yeah, it's when the scorpion stings the frog.
Yeah.
And it's like, well, it's my nature. You know, it's like, can Clint Eastwood, like, it's like in the beginning of the movie, it's like he almost, you feel that doom for him when he's being recruited to this mission of like, is he going along because, like, he wants to have money? Or is he going along because he's not really a hog farmer? You know, it's like the Kill Bill thing of, like, this is your disguise. You know?
You were made to be this.
Yeah.
Like, this is your true identity, and everything you do is just getting away from
you're,
it.
You're a scorpion.
He's just a mean drunk.
Yeah.
This is basically what it is.
TLDR.
Yeah.
But, I mean, the whole movie, up to that point, you know, he's like, I'm not like that anymore. I've gave all that up.
That'd be a great title for this movie. Mean Drunk. But Unforgiven, he's got like a lot of parallels too of, you know, I see the angel of death. I see the river, which I'm guessing is the river of Styx. He's mm-hmm. got snake eyes. Like, you know, he knows he's irredeemable in some way, shape or form. I don't know how or why, like, you know, he sees his wife that sounds like a goodly person. And he's like, oh, her face was covered with worms. He was probably just, you know, being tormented mm-hmm. by that. Like If this is a movie where heaven and hell do exist, I'm doubtful that she's actually in, you know, in hell, but he's being tormented by these visions.
By the belief that she is.
In this fever dream he's having. So, and they talk about it all the time. It's just like, oh, he's just cold-blooded. He doesn't give a shit if, you know, they're like, Gene Hackman's like, you just shot a guy, an unarmed man. And he goes, yeah, I mean.
Want to see me do it again?
It's a great
line. It's exactly like. Oh, what?
It's a great line where he's like, well, he should have armed himself. He's going to decorate a saloon with my friend.
Exactly.
It's such a great line.
It's exactly also like Bronn in Game of Thrones. Like, you don't fight with honor. We're like, yeah, he did. Dude, he just kicked through the moon door. That's exactly what this energy is like. He's like, I don't give a shit. Like,
that's the thing. He's an assassin. He's not some, you know, like, high and mighty soldier mm-hmm. or high and mighty, like, sheriff that's going to come in and, you know, try to uphold law. He's here to kill people.
Yeah.
It's like bringing
that's his job and he's going
to
do it well.
A knife to a gunfight, except in this case, he was like, you shouldn't have pissed me off.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And it's funny because it's like you see that the kid, the Schofield kid, he is the antithesis of like, he's the would-be, like the wannabe, like the, you know, watching Lonesome Dove, there's a scene that kind of parallels this where it's like Robert Duvall's like this old gunfighter and he's trying to get the drop on these like bandits and they've kidnapped a woman and Chris Cooper plays like this young sheriff, and before they get there, they draw their guns in this canyon, and Robert Duvall asks him, like, have you ever killed anybody before? And Chris Cooper's like, no, I haven't. He's like, well, then you need to stay back, because basically, like, you're not ready for what's about to happen. You can't handle this.
Mm. What movie is that?
Lonesome Dove.
Oh, okay.
Miniseries.
Is that the mini? Okay. It's like 12 hours or 8 hours? Or
six. Something? No, it's...
Seven.
Yeah, somewhere in that range. It was over 4 nights mm-hmm. on TV, so... But basically, it's that same idea of, like, you have no idea what you're about to get into.
Yeah.
So that's kind of like this kid, when he kills somebody, actually kills somebody, he's not ready for that feeling of, like, actually taking a life. So.
And the Schofield kid is, like, someone who's grown up on these legends, right? Mm-hmm, he's grown mythology. Up on, like, the mythology of these outlaws.
The Duke of Death.
Yeah.
The Duck of Death.
The Duck of Death, you know? Yeah. And he's a kid who wants to kind of make a name for himself, and he wants to be a part of that conversation. But obviously, he's not ready.
What do we think of that actor, the Schofield kid?
I mean, it's got to be tough when you're doing scenes with, like, Morgan, you know, Freeman, and but. Eastwood and, you know, Gene Hackman, all the people. It's like you're just in a cast of Oscar winners. That's got to be tough. So, I mean, he seems like an overmatched actor.
I mean, he does, but he I was thinking of that same thing. And I was like, man, this guy is, you know, it, in the movie, it was like, man, this guy's a little bitch. He's not all that great. But, like, he did what he was supposed to do, yeah, right?
He played the character.
He showed up, and I was like, man, fuck this guy. Like, we're going to wait until he's going to die. Then Clint Eastwood's going to go in and clean up, whatever.
Thinking he's a red shirt.
Yeah, yeah. He's just a stepping stone. All he was there was to introduce the plot and to move it along. That's it. Like, yeah. I for some reason, I was like, this guy is definitely going to die. Mm-hmm. But as it went along, I'm like, okay, yeah, he can't hold up the same chops as these other actors. But, like, you know what? He did exactly what he was supposed to do.
It kind of fits the role.
Yeah, it just, it, yeah.
But at the end of the day, who did they fridge? Morgan Freeman.
That's true.
Yeah.
And they did a lot of, I mean, not a whole hell of a lot, but they did a lot of the, depth, where they're double focusing on characters. Like, they mainly did it whenever the cut-up gal, Dolores, I think her name's
Delilah.
Delilah.
They have that song.
Where she's talking to Eastwood when he's coming out of his fever, and you see her offer herself to him, and he's like, well, no, it's not because you're cut up. It's because I'm fucked up.
They're doing free ones.
But they're doing, they have.
Do you want a free one?
Both of them. What is that called, like, when they're
focus?
Deep focus?
Mm-hmm.
Where foreground and background are both focused, because mm-hmm. they do it then, and then they also do it. I lost it.
Whenever Gene Hackman's whipping Morgan Freeman, you see it then too.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And then they keep showing one of his weird deputies that just, like, is always doing, like, a weird look, and you're like, ah, this guy can't get shot soon enough.
Spoiler alert.
Yeah. And what was my other thought? Oh. The beginning, the title crawl, like, I really thought that, I mean, until I saw the end of the movie, I'm like, this isn't Star Wars. I don't want, like, the crawl is weird. I think it would have been better if they would have just had matte black and then shown the quick part of the story or something. I don't know.
No, I think that's the stylistic difference. Was weird. Like, that was very much like an old Western thing, you know, is having that crawl of story.
Well, yeah. I also thought it should have been voiceover of Morgan Freeman, but he didn't obviously live at the
again.
End.
And they were going to make it that way, but they decided not to.
But they did. Yeah, it needed. I know there's the debate on Blade Runner, but, like, for me, I don't know. It should have been, I don't know, even his daughter. For some reason, I was thinking it would have been better with a voiceover. It just seemed weird how it started.
This movie felt old. It felt older than 92.
And some of the writing, like, there's stuff that happens in a screenplay, right, that when you're filming it, maybe doesn't feel right. The dialogue, whenever he's leaving and he goes, yeah, you guys just remember about your dear departed ma and all that. Just it immediately seemed to me like, yeah, you just remember the spirit of your ma is watching over you. Like, would have been way better than your dear departed mother. Like, it's it was funky. Just too flowery over.
Yeah.
It's one of those things where you're watching the beginning. It's like when I watched Frank Miller's Sin City at first, and I was like, what the fuck am I watching at the beginning of this? Like, fuck this. And then later on, you're immersed, and then you have the buy-in, and then everything seems to make sense.
That actually happened to me with Fablemans. Is like one of the first shots of the Fablemans is when they're standing in line for a movie theater, and like the dad is just like, now the pictures move at this many frames, and your eye only process it tricks the brain. And I'm like, okay, this is going to get real tired real quick. And then, like, after a couple scenes, I was like, okay, that's just character. But I just thought this entire movie was just going to be Steven Spielberg just gluck in theater.
Movie nerd porn.
Yeah.
That is weird that it's a little bit of the willing suspension of disbelief. Like, all right, I'm if here you hit me in with the it theater.
Too early, I'm not going to buy in. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But there is a certain, I guess you get, it's like watching a movie with subtitles. After a little bit, you're like, all right, I'm in the groove now.
Second nature.
But that's how this started out, too. It started out a little rough for me. And in places, it wasn't perfect. So for me, this film, it was pretty predictable, but I'll give it, I'm going to give it a solid 7.
And I actually noticed the same thing that you did in that line. And I chalk that up to him being, some people are very natural with kids and natural parents. And there's kind of some people have those instincts and some people are just very, very clunky, awkward. Some people are just like fumble finger dealing with kids. And I kind of interpret like he is a very awkward dad.
Well,
doesn't know how to talk.
His character would be made better if like they kind of focused on like, you know, she was the mother and had the maternal instincts and he was the old assassin who's just given up and raises pigs. And you know, he's not cut out to be a father.
I mean, he goes off and leaves them.
He's just straight up. He's just like, you're the man of the house now. Okay, bye.
Yeah. You know, it's like, it's obvious that he's an awkward parent because he's literally leaving his two kids on the prairie, like kill a couple chickens.
Hey, separate those two hogs and I'll be back in a couple weeks. Maybe I might die.
Yeah.
Bye.
Mm-hmm. He's just a bad parent.
Yeah. No, I agree, though.
Seems like the... What?
No, I was just going to say, it just... The screenwriting a lot of times felt a little clunky. The direction was good. I thought the story was predictable. It didn't keep my attention very well. You know, I found myself kind of looking away multiple times and just sort of not hanging in with this one. You know, that's why I texted. I was like, did I watch the right one? Is this like 1992 Western movie with Clint Eastwood and Morgan Freeman? Mm-hmm. Like this is the cultural impact movie that's on the AFI 100 list that I had to have seen.
Yeah. Yeah.
I didn't see it. I mean, like you said, they did a really good job of, you know, subverting the tropes. The Westerns, like all the Western themes were sort of turned on their head and there wasn't like a good guy versus a bad guy. And the way they told the story that way was fine. It wasn't an unpredictable plot. It was very linear. But sort of the characters and how they kind of interwove with the plot and their dialogue and their choices, that was a little bit more surprising. And I think it's interesting to kind of tell the story differently that way.
Yeah.
Great cast, but I don't feel like it gave that cast the material to do with what they have the chops to do. You know, like I would have expected more out of Morgan Freeman in this one. And they kind of just used him as like a backdrop character that just, like I said, he got fridged.
He's somebody who he's there for the common experiences with the Eastwood character to basically bring those stories out.
Yeah.
Somebody who's there.
Someone from the past that like, you know, has that experience and has that camaraderie with him that would give him someone emotionally tied to that when he dies, it gets him to turn.
Mm-hmm.
But again, it's just fridging his character, you know?
But you know, they don't even really, it's just, they're there to kill the two cowboys, and they don't even really show much interaction with them.
Yeah, they don't really care.
The first time they go up to, you know, fight one of them, it's just like, oh, Jesus, they're already there. They're the cowboys. I guess they're at a campfire. Oh, my God, they're getting shot at.
I hit them.
Oh, my God, I hit them. And then they draw that out, and they're like, oh, wow, yeah, this is really kind of fucked up. They're like assholes, but they're not trying to be fucking assholes. They're like, yeah, give them some water.
Yeah.
They just leave and they're like, oh, we got our way scot-free. No, like no stakes.
Yeah. There were no consequences. There were no like, you know, repercussions for their actions. And like the big reveal, oh, the Schofield kid who said he'd killed five men, he's killed none. That was his first time. Like they never did anything to try to dissuade him from the lifestyle. They didn't do anything like, you know, like, hey, maybe you should reconsider like this life isn't for anybody. Like, you don't do it. You're too young. You have opportunities. Even the good guys still kind of saw the women as property, you know?
Yeah.
Was it? And I think I also got it mixed up with maybe the remake of 3:10 to Yuma with Christian Bale and
Russell Crowe.
Where they're like having a big shootout like at the end and they keep walking around through there and there's like, you know, kind of a buddy.
I like that one, yeah. Where he's trying to escort Russell Crowe to the train, yeah.
But I for some reason, I thought I remembered Clint Eastwood leaving like the bar and then going out and having a big like rainy shootout with a whole bunch of people. Now, I did think it was very effective of them all being like, it reminded me of Kevin Spacey in Usual Suspects, like, what do you do when you try and shoot the devil in the back? Like, and he holds up his messed up hand. He's like, what if you miss? And that's what all the guys are kind of doing. They're like, you fucking shoot him. And he's like, I don't know. Hold on here. And he's like, well, I'm not a deputy. Fuck that. And nobody fucking touches him. Everybody's like, fuck that. I don't want none of that smoke.
Yeah.
That was kind of badass, but I was really kind of hoping for like a nice little shootout.
Yeah. And the last 10 minutes of this movie were the best part of this movie. Mm-hmm. You know, you get to see him go full Rambo and go just into the saloon and kill everybody.
They don't build hardly anything up. Like,
they the pacing is weird.
It was kind of nice them just like you hearing Gene Hackman talk. And he's giving a speech. Good job, guys. We're going to go mop up these bitches.
Morning, we're going to make a
and then everybody murder. Slowly starts to realize, like, there's a guy with a fucking hand cannon in his hand. Like, oh, shit. That was cool. So there were cool moments in this. I'm glad I watched it. It was good overall. But I think they're blowing a little smoke up its ass by being on like, top 100.
That's my thing. It's like, I would give this movie a 6, I think. Just because it didn't really keep my attention.
Yeah.
You know, the writing felt kind of and the direction was kind of flat. And, you know, maybe it was better in 1992.
Yeah.
I'm sure it was. I'm sure it was cool to see like a modern Western.
With Clint Eastwood, yeah.
Yeah.
For the last time.
It's got to be weird to try and direct yourself, too. Like, I don't know if he, again, well,
he's done it multiple times. Yeah. Done it
but I know with that line, like at the beginning, if he would have been like, well, this is what's on the page, I'll go ahead and say this. And it just, you need a separate perspective to look at me like, man, that line didn't that work or something bad. That was
rework that.
Yeah. He's like, well, I did it like it was on the page. He just there, you know, a good actor might be like, hey, there, he is a good actor, but I'm just saying it was clunky.
Even he, I don't think we got good acting chops out of him in this one. He felt, I mean, his acting range is very specific. It's very
Clint Eastwood.
Well, he's playing subdued, though, at the beginning. Like, he's Bruce Banner most of the time, and then he unleashes right at the end. That's why the last 10 minutes is the best.
Yeah.
Is because it's your, you know, it's keep him wanting more. It's just like, ah, oh, what? I came here to see a Clint Eastwood movie. What the fuck? And the last 10 minutes, you get it.
And you hadn't seen this one
before? I hadn't.
Okay.
What do you think?
So, another thing to think about here is, I mean, you're talking like, you're reviewing it like in terms of its place in the top 100. And the thing about these movies is they have to age, and you kind of have to age with them a little bit. Like you have to, none of these movies were graded by people who watched them for the first time. That's the interesting thing about these movies is people have seen them quite a few times. And it's like, for me, I was this exact same way you guys were when I first saw this. I actually saw this in a theater, which totally is inappropriate for as young as I was. But then the first few times I watched it, I did not understand why it won Best Picture. I did not get it.
Oh, it did?
Shit. Yeah,
Best Picture.
Yeah.
What else was it up against?
Yeah,
92.
What else was it up against?
I know Howard's End was one of the movies, which I enjoyed Howard's End a lot. That was a Merchant Ivory movie. I should know this. I watched these Academy Awards. I was young. This is back when I was more into the Oscars than I am now. But I didn't understand why this movie won then. And I've probably seen it a dozen times since then. And it's like my opinion of it gets higher every time I watch it.
Ah.
It actually, like, it grows in stature for me. Mm-hmm. And to the point now to where I see this as, like, one of the great Westerns. This is, like, a bookend to the Western genre. This is, like, the epilogue to it. You know, it's like, to me, I think about these, a lot of characters in movies, it's like what James Bond says in Casino Royale, where he's like, you know, we have a short lifespan, so, you know, your belief in me is going to be short-lived. Or if I make a mistake, it's going to be short-lived. It's like, or Jason Bourne, when Jason Bourne has to go back and, like, confront the people, like, the relatives of the people he's killed in those movies, like, he goes and sees the daughter or whatever. It's like, these are people, like, Clint Eastwood's character has lived long enough to see himself as the villain. Like, he has to go back and look at, like, the choices he's made. Like, he has to think about what he's done.
That's true.
Most outlaws and gunfighters don't live that long.
There was the 93 Academy Awards for 92 movies. So, Unforgiven, going up against The Crying Game, A Few Good Men, Howard's End, and Scent of Woman.
Yeah. And I think that it was the best of those. In my opinion.
A Few Good Men and Scent of a Woman.
Yeah.
Man, those are both good.
Was Howard's End on that list?
Or yeah.
Yeah. That I think was probably the only one that would compete with it for Best Picture.
Wait, that's Tom Cruise, Demi Moore.
And Jack Nicholson.
I don't know, man.
Kevin Bacon.
I would have gone that.
Aaron Sorkin.
Can't handle.
It's a good movie, for sure.
That would have been my pick, at least, for that year.
But
But yeah, he does mention several of like the people he's killed before. And he's like, man, he didn't deserve that.
Or shot him through the mouth.
Hey, I saw Eagle Hendershot and, you know, there were maggots on his face or worms on. Like, yeah, he's getting haunted, definitely.
Mm-hmm. So basically, and it's kind of like watching The Irishman. It's the same idea where it's like you see him in a nursing home or whatever. It's like you see somebody who, or the rare person who's lived long enough to be able to look backward.
Yeah, someone who's lived long enough to have regrets.
Yeah.
So what's your rating system on this?
I would give this, I mean, like with you guys, first time I saw it, I would probably give this 6.5 maybe. I would say, having seen this a dozen times or so, an 8.5.
8.5?
Yeah.
I can see it getting better with age, mm-hmm. for sure.
Every time I watch it, I find more stuff that I like about it, like, because you can appreciate the more depth to it.
Have we potted on Tombstone?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
I can't remember. Mm-hmm. Didn't we all give it like a 10?
Yeah.
Straight up?
So. It's pretty high.
Just close. I was thinking about that on the drive over here. I'm like, what other Westerns have I said? Like, I keep thinking because we gave Kill Bill,
which is
1 and 2, a 10.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And I was like, well, Tombstone, I think it's a fucking 10.
We've done good.
But I don't know if it's a 10 the first time I watched it or if there's a nostalgia bump at this point. Like, you've seen it several times.
We did Good, the Bad, and the Ugly. Mm-hmm. I think it was just the two of us.
Could be.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, all of those are classics. I see this as...
I think we did 310 to Yuma, too.
We haven't done that one yet. I would love to do that sometime.
Sure? The remake?
Yeah, I thought we did the remake.
Mm-mm. I would love it if we did. I mean, I enjoyed both those movies, the original and the remake. Glenn Ford.
Hell did I watch it recently?
I don't know. I own that one. That's a good movie. I didn't see it in theaters. I saw it on DVD. But I remember seeing this one in theaters, and it's just like, I didn't know what to make of it, of Unforgiven.
All I remember from 310 to Yuma is, for some reason, I guess they're in the middle of building a town or something, but I remember all of the shots, at least the sound or the Foley or something, sounded like almost like a nail gun. Like, it was very, like, sharp, all of the bullet shots, or maybe it was because it was going through wood, but I remember that distinctly from that film. But
yeah, that makes me think of the movie Heat, where it's like they get the sound of gunshots right, where it's, like, deafening. Mm. You know, they kind of gloss over that in movies where people shoot guns. It's like,
R.I.P. Tom Sizemore.
Yeah.
Great fucking actor.
One of his best performances, too. But yeah, I mean, in reality, like, gunshots spook horses, sometimes even very well-trained horses. They kind of gloss over that in movies.
Yeah.
I did like him getting kicked off the horse.
Over
and over. I was really hoping, I was like, shit, I can't remember, does that happen? Like, after he's a badass, like, I'm a Billy Badass, I just took out all these guys. If them all sitting there watching, if his horse would have been like, fuck off, and he'd be like, shit.
Just leave him. Yeah.
But he had had his whiskey, so
mm-hmm.
he'd whip his horse and like, fuck off.
Yeah. Yeah, it's crazy. I mean, so yeah, I've enjoyed it more and more every time. I would say 8.5. It's improved.
So what was your initial watch? You said probably would have been 6.5.
If back in the day, yeah.
And so the rewatch.
What, like 10?
Oh, yeah, I was in middle school for some reason.
The rewatchability and the nostalgia bump gives it 8.5.
Yeah, it improves.
What pointage or what percentage of your boosted score is rewatchability or nostalgia bump? Like, is it 60-40? What's the scoop?
I would say it's 80-20. Rewatchability, I don't feel a strong nostalgia for this because I didn't love it the first time I saw it. To me, it's more like I find new things to appreciate about it because it's like the Western genre was built on kind of a weightless violence. You think about even the classic 50s, 40s, 30s, like the classic Westerns where people get shot, they fall off of roofs and they do the thing. It's like they fall off of barn roofs. It's like, you know, it's like it's a very weightless killing. You don't see any blood.
Yeah.
And it's like this makes killing and violence very ugly, very close quarters.
It's always been very dehumanizing, right? Because it's like you're killing just faceless bad guys.
Yeah. And it's like Clint Eastwood's line, iconic line now, is like, you know, it's a hell of a thing killing a man. You take away everything he's got and everything he's ever going to be. You know, it's like it's a simple but very profound line about
everything he's going to have.
Yeah.
And I thought it was always going to be.
Or yeah, everything's going to have.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's like it gives you like the weight of taking somebody's life. So it's like, it's deceptive because it sounds like a simple, you know, Clint Eastwood, you know, very gravelly voice thing to say, but it sums up like the weight of this movie very well, like how horrible it is to actually kill somebody, you know?
I don't know why. I just thought of these. I can't, I have never seen Young Guns 2, but Young Guns, the first one, I fucking love that movie. That was very early 90s too, or it might've been 90. I don't remember.
And ironically, I saw a clip of Old School recently. This is a weird tie-in, but where Will Ferrell takes the dart to the neck. And, they, you know, hey.
Chavez, are you see the size of that chicken?
Are you okay? But then it's like the Young Guns, when they do the peyote, it's like, you know. What? Do you see the size of that chicken over there? It's like, man, that peyote's some good stuff.
God, I need to watch that again. I need to watch 2.
2 is a hell of a movie.
Is it
oh, yeah.
better or almost as good as the first?
I think it's better. I like 2 better than 1.
Really?
Yeah.
I love the scene where he's like, he's fucking with the guy in the saloon that doesn't know that he's Billy the Kid. Mm-hmm. And he takes all of his what bullets out of his gun. Yeah. It's just whistling in his face. I fucking love that. I taped that off of TV. I watch that VHS a lot.
Do we need a podcast on this like 4 more times to get it up to like an 8.5?
No. I mean, I would say it's definitely over the years worth going back to down the road. See what you think of it in 5 years.
So that's why I asked the question is because I love Fright Night and I'm like, oh, this is a good vampire movie. And then I watch it several more times. I'm like, so fucking good. I see something different or I watch a new interview or it makes me go watch a documentary about it or mm-hmm. read a book about it. And I'm not sure if it's the rewatchability or now like the nostalgia at this point that right. really, but with that, it gives me, that's my vampire mythology. Cause every time they come out with a movie, they're like, oh yeah, silver doesn't do shit. So don't worry. You throw a cross at them, they're going to turn you around and shove that up your ass. Like, for me, the Fright Night mythology, I'm like, fits with my headcanon of vampire mythology, which is why I like it. So, yeah. I don't know. That's a part of the nerdery I like, too. So, that's why I asked your rewatchability and nostalgia. Like, I'm like, it grows in the town. Like, Hook, to me, Hook, damn near a 10 movie. I think I would give it a 10.
I don't think there's any nostalgia there. I think it's great. Just a great movie.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So much fun. But yeah, I mean, watching this now, it's like the scene where Hackman takes Richard Harris's guns. You know, it's like such a well-constructed, like, tense scene, how it builds. Like, you think he's going to walk away. It's like, well, I'll see you gentlemen later. And then he walks away, and it's like, you know, I'll take your .32. So he's like, got another gun stashed away.
That's the other shot. That's, what'd you say?
Like a deep focus shot.
Deep focus shot.
Where Richard Harris turns to the camera, and he's about to walk away, and you see Gene Hackman in the background, knowing he's got another gun on him.
Mm-hmm. Question. So Gene Hackman's character mispronounces Beauchamp, right, as Beauchamp. Mm-hmm. He never sees it written out at any point, right? He just mispronounces it with a P without ever seeing it.
He's mocking him, yeah.
Yeah.
Is he mocking him? I thought they were doing like a whole like illiterate like.
We also call the other guy Duck instead of Duke.
He's making fun of him.
Yeah. Okay. I don't know.
Yeah.
Well, I just thought they were making a literacy joke. And maybe this guy's kind of a dingus.
And that could be. I just interpret that as Hackman was just mocking him. He's just like this, you know, fucking tenderfoot pansy.
Tough guy, shitty carpenter.
Yeah.
Yeah, the only person you need to kill is the carpenter. What'd you say?
Mm-hmm. But so yeah, I enjoyed it. We'll see what you guys think down the road.
I enjoyed it. I'm glad I watched it.
Yeah,
it's fine.
Yeah,
I've watched it.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah. Wait, you hadn't seen it before?
I hadn't.
Oh, seen that's it right. No. Okay.
And there'll be movies I think on this list for sure. There's always classic movies that you don't think much of the first time, or sometimes ever. There's classic movies for me for sure that I've never loved. So you never know.
Yep. We need to find more movies that you haven't seen.
No, they're out there. They're just not on the top 100. There's some.
Fright Night Part 2.
They've never seen Fright Night Part 2.
Still got to do it.
Electric Boogaloo.
Mm. Next Halloween.
Mm-hmm.
It's happening for sure.
Leprechaun 4.
I've never seen Leprechaun 4.
Back to the Hood.
Never seen Major League 3. Back to the Minors.
You ever seen Critters 1 through 4? One of them has Leo DiCaprio.
Police Academy 7.
No, never seen that.
Oh, is that the one where they go to Russia?
I don't know. I know Police Academy 3 is when Bobcat Goldthwait becomes a cop because he's the bad guy in 2.
Nice. Yeah.
He becomes a cop in 3.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. He does the Apollo Creed and turns around and becomes a frenemy.
Yeah. Yeah.
But this has been another episode of Cinema Vino. And we thank you guys so much. We got Bone Shaker Zinfandel. This is 2020 vintage. This is a good, very drinkable, accessible, kind of medium-bodied, fruit-forward red Zin.
Yeah, it's got flavors of plum, boysenberry, dark chocolate, and hints of vanilla and oak. Best paired with lasagna, barbecue ribs.
What about pizza?
Or your favorite pizza.
Oh.
Exactly.
Maybe a margarita pizza?
No.
Oh, wait. No, that's Alfredo, isn't
it? You need that red.
Did we already talk about this?
No, I don't think so.
This is a great wine.
I get it. I get a nice peppery vibe from it, too. I think it'd be good with like a... I think you could do this with a steak, for sure.
There's a good pepperiness to it.
Yeah. I think you could do this with a nice filet mignon, which I believe I will have tomorrow night for dinner. So
this is really good. Really
I think enjoy tomorrow night for dinner you're having... Mommy to OKC.
Yeah, that was last week. He's reading our schedule off the fridge. So we're exciting around here.
What's it? Ants on a log. Is that the celery that has peanut butter and then just like raisins on top?
Yeah. It's culinary.
So yummy.
Is that crunchy or smooth?
It is what you want it to be.
I mean, it's your ants on a log. Are you using crunchy or smooth?
Oh, peanut butter? Oh, crunchy.
Okay. Extra or just crunchy?
I'm going to go extra crunchy. I'm not a barbarian.
I'm just going to eat peanuts.
He loves it, peanuts.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Are you a smooth peanut butter guy?
No, I love those peanuts.
Okay, yeah. I'm a crunchy
peanuts in my mouth
crunchy
all day.
Peanuts all day.
I'm glad.
Peanuts.
This podcast can continue. We're all crunchy people.
We should do a podcast where we're just eating peanut butter the whole time.
Peanut to the roof of our mouth.
This is Filipino.
Welcome back.
Guys, we got to end this episode.
So we will see you guys next time. Great movies, a drunker. The whole business. So we love you.
Hasta luego.
Be sure to listen, rate, and subscribe at Apple Podcasts, Spotify, CastBox, or wherever you listen to podcasts. Our website is at cinemavino.net, and reviews of these films can be found at toddwoffordmovies.com.